in the instructions.
In the instructions this morning, I will go over the themes of the meditations with you. Yesterday afternoon, Sanjay spoke to us about the four truths of the Noble Ones, often referred to as the Four Noble Truths. So this morning I just did a brief summary, often regarded as the very heart of the teachings, and emailed over to Saha, and she sometime during the day will print out the sheet, which just gives a little summary of what we listened to yesterday, and very much based, of course, on what the Buddha had said. Coming to the meditations, there is a gradual process which is taking place. There is a certain thread and emphasis, and it's based, as you will have heard, on this much-loved and classic discourse of the Buddha called Mindfulness of Breathing. And the experience and the relationship to breathing, as the Buddha commented once, of the very wide range of meditation methods, techniques and forms which are available, he once commented that he regarded mindfulness of breathing as being extraordinarily beneficial because of the different aspects of it. And I'll just name a few of them here for you. One, it contributes to the development of the power of the concentrated mind. And there are times in our daily life when we are procrastinating, we're putting things off, we're avoiding, we can't get round to doing. It may be an indication for us that we have lost the power to concentrate on things which matter. Our giving attention to the breath and to the body is developing the capacity to concentrate. And there are areas in our daily life which we genuinely may well need to concentrate on, and we need that power of the mind. The mindfulness of the breathing, it contributes as well to the harmony of body and mind. And quite often, as we know, our mind can be wandering, daydreaming, fantasizing, story. We get out of touch with the immediacy of life. We get out of touch with the body. And sometimes that neglect of the body leads to significant health issues, to vulnerability in accidents, in hurting ourselves, because the mind and body are not really in harmony nor in tune with each other. The mindfulness of the breathing experience acts as a really helpful bridge to between body and mind, mind including heart, feelings and thoughts. So mindfulness of breathing contributes to the sense of well-being and harmony of the whole human being. There are times in life when you and I receive painful and difficult information, unexpected, completely out of the blue. And how easily worry and anxiety, impatience, agitation can arise. Practice of the mindfulness of breathing will and does contribute to breaking up some of that stream of agitated thought so that we can stay reasonably calm and reasonably clear and respond well to situations because we are using the mindfulness of breathing as an anchor, as a way to keep ourselves centered in difficult times, painful times, physically, information-wise, or whatever. the mindfulness of breathing also contributes to genuine depths of meditation. And the Buddha in the teachings speaks a great deal about the benefit of deep meditation. In the depths of the meditation and that sense of well-being in the deep of our being, it releases happiness. That happiness reduces obsessions, addictions, habits, and the endless reaching out for gratification. The constant looking for pleasure and the pressure that we put on other people, on places, on our very vulnerable resources on the earth, and the greed to want more. So the mindfulness of breathing contributes to a deep sense of well-being in which there are the pleasures of life, for sure. There's the genuine happinesses of life there, but one has a sense and knows that it's not coming out of neediness. It's not coming out of putting pressure on other people for attention or on the market for goods and possessions. So, with the practice of the mindfulness of breathing, for calmness, for clarity, for concentration, for harmony, for cutting through intensity of thought, for deep meditation, for freeing up the heart. Okay, advertisement is over. If you're not persuaded, then keep practicing. All right. No apologies for such forms of advertising, by the way. In the thread which is running through our days together, we're keeping trust, we're keeping faith, we might say, with a certain quiet consistency of the mindfulness of breathing. And then we're including or embracing or bringing into it other features. And this is what I want to speak to you a little bit about this morning. So, in the very initial instructions that you listened to, there was the encouragement to be in contact with the mindfulness of breath and in that knowing of the condition of the breath. In this case, knowing if it's long or short, if it's deep or shallow, if it's settled or unsettled, just to be in touch with the experience in a way which knows what is taking place. Of course, as we spoke to you, mind will wander and drift from time to time. But nevertheless, the primary interest is that contact of experiencing the in-breathing and the out-breathing. And then we began to add, so to speak, a little bit more to that, and that adding to it was experiencing the whole body, from the top of the head to the toes, so that as we breathe in, the air element comes in through the nose, it enters down into the lungs, and the cells of the body are affected. The oxygen enters into the body. As we get more connected, as the power of the concentration mindfulness gets closer, we may be able to begin to experience the inhaling and the exhaling and the significant and life-supporting influence that the breath has on the body. To the point where there is a sense, in a way, that the whole body is breathing in and the whole body is breathing out. So there is breathing in and out and experiencing the body. And this experiencing of the body firmly places us in touch with the body, not so much as a possession, not so much as an identity of who I am, which is the common relationship, but a quiet but valuable shift in the relationship to the body, in which we are seeing the body as organic life. We're seeing the body as the composition of elements, as DNA, as cells interacting together. So there's a recognition of the becoming of the body, the evolution of the body, the presentation of the body. We breathe in and we breathe out, and to use the Buddha's words here, to experience body as body. To experience this formation of organic life as this formation of organic life. To be close to it. To experience it. To know the vibrations and the sensations and the throbbing and the tingling. To know the painful areas. To know the areas of the body where we can't feel, and to connect with those. To have a sense of the whole of the mindfulness or consciousness is very much devoted to the real, in the silence, experience of the body. Just to feel this body. Just to feel what it is to be alive on this earth, in the formation as a human being, and to be quietly and totally attentive to this experience. And that may contribute to much being revealed to us through our own experience, which is the best. The instructions in that first tetrad, that means the first group of four, when mindfulness of breathing in and mindfulness of breathing out, as I mentioned, experiencing of the whole body, and then quite purposefully and deliberately bringing relaxation to the body. And so that in our sitting meditations, walking, standing and reclining, with all four postures, to quite purposefully with the upright posture, to experience the condition of the relaxation of the body, to really genuinely feel relaxed there. The body does not have to slump. The energy does not have to drop. So there's still energy, quality of mindfulness, connection with the whole body, and just noticing the relaxation of the body. It may well be, of course, even with the relaxation of the body, that various parts of the body will experience pain. And those locations may be anywhere. If we are resisting any painful experience in the body, we are doubling the pain. There will be pain in the body, and then we find ourselves trying to control it, or fighting it, or resisting it, or praying, even though one doesn't believe in God, for the end of the meditation. There is the sign of the great liberation, or something else. So the relaxation factor directed to the body, and the experience of the relaxation through the body, may well allow and enable painful areas of the body to stand out more clearly. If we are going to allow consciousness, that means to be conscious, to get really close to the body, and for some people, for the first time in their life, to get really close to the body, then we have to be receptive and acknowledge what the body is revealing. And therefore sometimes, not for everybody, sometimes it is revealing locations of pain. The relaxation that we are bringing to the body will contribute and give us some support to working with the painful region. Where is the outer edge of the pain? where is the epicenter of it? In which moment do I contract? Where do I find myself resisting the pain? Do I start putting my pressure on myself to keep still and just start using willpower instead of relaxation, as they are quite different? Do I come to a point in my practice, sitting, walking, standing, or reclining? Do I come to a point in it where the painful aspect is too strong? Is the wisdom at that time to change the posture, to stretch the legs, to bend the back, to move the body, with the view of not running away from, not avoiding, but with the view to moving to a more relaxed condition and then returning back to the original posture, so that we begin to experience the experience of the body, the experience of, in this case, painful parts of the body. We develop quite consistently a relaxation of the body there, and learning to feel the relaxation of the body. There are other times and situations as well during the day where some tightness in the body may occur. And of course, one can be hurrying from one place to another. A story or a stream of thoughts may arise, and then we turn the attention to the body and we see, wow, my shoulders are hunching up, my hands are gripping, I'm contracting muscles or parts of the body. So we're taking a real interest in this relaxation of the body with the firm and upright posture. And then from there we went to what's the second tetrad, the second group of four, which was spoken to you about yesterday. And I'll just go to the text here for a moment. And there are two words in the heart life which are used very frequently in relationship to meditation, in relationship to mindfulness, and much else. And once, when the Buddha asked, well, why do we follow this way of life? A life of inquiry, of exploration, of love and service, of ethics and respect. Why do we follow this way of life? And the immediate answer was, because it is the happiest way to live. That's why. And the element of happiness is clearly and obviously a feeling factor which we enjoy, to feel happy. Quite often, we confuse happiness with the pursuit of pleasure and getting what I want. And then one has some satisfaction, as we all know, very, very short-lived, and how quickly we get used to something. How quickly. Recently I gave my old television set to my darling daughter and then got a new one. I hardly even watch the thing anyway, but with a bigger screen. And when I first looked at this screen, I thought, wow, it's incredible. 2 days later, if I forgot it was bigger than the last one, you know. So there's a momentary pleasure in things that may arise, and then it's quickly going to go. Happiness is of a different order there. It's not so dependent on the outside, and it's related to the interior life. It may, both for those of you who have been in the meditator's world previously, as well as for those of you who are new, it may genuinely be hard to recognize where on earth is the happiness in sitting cross-legged with painful knees, wandering mind, and the thought, get me out of here. So sometimes it will seem a little bit more like struggle and quite some challenge to us to face one's existence, and meditation includes that. We are facing the body. We are facing experience. We are facing the condition of the mind. We've taken away all the comfort zones, all the things which distract us, and we're in our sitting, walking, standing and reclining. The basic statement in a way is, this is one's existence, like it or not, this is what is happening. We are facing up to this. And sometimes, genuinely, that is not easy. One's got nowhere to run to. It's something honest about it, to face one's existence, and meditation certainly includes that actuality. Despite all of that, there are moments, and they are precious moments, and as the discourse, I breathe in and out, experiencing happiness. And what that means is that sometimes in the posture, the four primary postures, as well as outside of it, sometimes there is an authentic, genuine, quiet sense, it may be, of happiness. The happiness may emerge in a very simple way, and very simple for some. I am happy to be here in such a culture, in such a spiritual climate, and I'm happy for this opportunity to be in this silence, to be in this stillness, and especially to really be with myself, to really be with this human being. And there can be a genuine happiness at the opportunity and the privilege of that. There can be the happiness while breathing in and out, while passing through the day, of the contact and the recognition and the sharing that goes on in the groups. The happiness of indoors and outdoors. The moments of happiness, I breathe in and out, experiencing happiness. These moments of happiness are precious. Because in the small moments of happiness, it is something often quite unexpected, which comes from the deep in the human being, and it comes into consciousness, and something touches us. The happiness touches us. It's almost a gift. Sometimes it's a surprise. And this happiness, the Buddha puts a lot of emphasis on, because, as is stated, this happiness is a true blessing of life. Quite often, we hardly recognize the preciousness of the happiness, or we move on from it far too quickly. I've got more important things to do. No, you haven't. But the thought easily takes one away. As if we've got no time for happiness, which is sad. So, to redress the balance, the consciousness is unusually interested in momentary happiness, the experience of it. Sometimes, of course, it comes through with the humour. Teachings and humour have always had a relationship. Sometimes there is just some moment there. Some people will say to me, Christopher, I love your retreats because the food is so good and I'm willing to put up with the rest. So I can be present at 7:30, 12:30 and 5:30 each day. And so sometimes the thought arises, oh, lunchtime, it's only 2.5 hours to go. So then some happiness comes. Oh, food is on its way, the cooks are doing absolutely brilliantly well, etc. So the moments of happiness moving through the being, they're a spark, they touch on consciousness, they contribute to health. They contribute to, happiness contributes to emotional health, psychological health, and physical health. People who are happy human beings there, it contributes to the whole sense of welfare there. And, you know, when we are happy there, we don't, lots of the questions and thoughts that we have about it may just drop away. When we're happy, we say, oh my God, I'm happy. Why am I happy? I shouldn't be happy. We take it as the natural, which it is. But when we're unhappy, when we're anxious, when we're worried, when we're fearful, when we're angry, when we're depressed, when we're not accepting ourselves, when we have a low sense of worth, then the thought starts coming in. Why am I like this? Why am I thinking like this? I don't need to be like this. I shouldn't be living like this. I shouldn't have this view about myself like this. Yeah. So thought will often, not always, but will often come in with regard to the problematic mind. And when you and I experience a sense of well-being and there's happiness there, the mind doesn't need to be working so much. So our experience with the happiness is important. It, in such times, the mindfulness of breathing may still be there. We are not, as Sandy was pointing out yesterday, mindfulness of breathing is a good support for us, but we're not clinging to the breath. It's not a relationship of mindfulness breathing, which I think I should be with every in and out breath. So if in the posture, any of the four postures, happiness comes, please, please, just stay with it. Feel it. Let it be. Let the warmth of it come. And sometimes it may come quite strongly. It may come from memory. Something precious and lovely happened in your life, and quite unexpectedly it just moves through the being. Let it move through. There is no need to say to oneself, oh, I shouldn't be happy because that happened 30 years ago, before I was born or something. Just recognize memory can carry happiness as well. Teaching, as we heard yesterday, it's not that the past is a problem. But teachings have never said the past is a problem. It's the relationship to it. So I may have a joyful memory of what took place. I allow that to move through the being with the understanding, it's a very simple one, do not cling to it. Do not hold on to it. Do not try to get it back. Regard it as something which has emerged through the being into consciousness. One feels it. When he experiences it, the breath may be rather in the background for a little while. Let the feeling come through. And when it fades, there's an appreciation for it. And in the appreciation, one goes back to the breath or to the walking or whatever it is. So happiness can come in various directions. Just recently we had our walk in France. We do this every year, Yatra pilgrimage. We're in the Alps, in the French Alps there. And in one of the camping locations that we use. There were some very high hills near just where we were. And what was precious about it, it blocked out all the light. So in the night, when one looked up at the sky, it was just sparkling with stars, just sparkling there. And as we looked up, I was just looking up at the stars, and just having this sense of looking far and deep into the universe, you know, and this sense of happiness and awe and wonder, and the extraordinary actuality of wonder of human evolution, where this tiny little instrument, and even at my age, this tiny little instrument can just look up, and the little boy says, wow, look at that. And this little thing can see so much, and so deep, and so far, billions of stars there out that's sparkling, and it's a magic show that's going on. And that happiness of that is precious. So far, human beings haven't been able to turn the stars into real estate. There'll be some thinking about it, I'm sure. Right. So, much happiness can come from the world around us and touch us well and deeply and beautifully, bring much happiness, and we know I can't possess it. The best of happiness from the world is the happiness which I can't own. I can't buy it. And if we get the natural happinesses through our eyes and ears coming to us, the interest in having and owning and possessing will just be for the necessities of life, just be for the aesthetics of life. Because we know a happiness which is out of the field of owning and possessing. In the tetrad, there's a shift that takes place, and sometimes we can notice this, where it's stated, mindfully breathing in and out, I experience happiness, and then it's mindfully breathing out, I experience joy. Sometimes I notice this, and perhaps you do. Sometimes a lot of happiness may come. And it may come from a single contact. You know, I mentioned the young lovers who met some 60 years later, and the tremendous bliss, that's the intensity of the happiness running through the being. As that happiness, because it begins to fade, sometimes with the happiness, it then becomes more subtle, more refined. And then in Dharma language, it's called joy. Sometimes there can be lovely waves of happiness, the movement of happiness from the past, from the immediate present, from the insight, from the potential for the future, many ways that the happiness can come. As I said, sometimes the happiness which comes as it refined, it's a feeling of a quiet joy. This joy is just beautiful. Just to feel the quiet joy of the small things of life. Sometimes it's the creatures on the ground, you and I as human beings, we are guests here. One of your yogis said, went to bed one night, and sometimes one has the view that being in bed, it will be a solitary experience there, and the person, she said that she found that she was sharing her bed with with a number of ants. So sometimes one takes a few steps, and sometimes, possibly, one enjoys the experience of sharing and the variety of sensations of ants wandering around. Anyway. And then,
Also in the meditation, since happiness and joy, they arise and they fade, they're also sometimes, rather technical language here, it's called mental formations. Some of you have heard the word sankhara. Sam means coming together, and kara means activity. So sometimes our experience, while breathing in and out, is just experience what's coming together in heart and mind, in feeling and thought. What is coming together? And just to see it as that. It might be a story, pleasurable or painful. Ah, this is what's coming together. It might be some theory running through the mind. Okay, this is coming together. It might be a memory. That's the right thing. Okay. This is the mental formation. This is what's coming together. It may be that in what's coming together, as is pointed out here, can one bring to it some calmness to it? So, in other words, something may be coming together in the mind, a story, an event, a picture, an idea, and it starts to get heated. Can we bring some calmness to that? Can we take the heat out of the situation to help us see it more clearly? What would contribute to taking the heat out? As we heard last night, of causes and conditions. If we put wood on the fire will continue. If we're heated up about something, wanting, anger, fearfulness, stress, we may have to ask ourselves in our meditation as an inquiry, what is it that will take the heat out of the situation?
What was that one line like Sandhya quoted me last night? The event. That's right, thank you. That's a memory. So I had said probably more than once, to take the problem out of the event. So there may be a formation or a state of mind which is arising. One sees and notices it. One sees there is something problematic about it. One doesn't see any use in indulging in it, in keeping it going, in feeding it, in putting wood on the fire. What would it mean to take the problem out of the event? So the issue may still be there. The concern may still be there, but it's not charged with fear. It's not charged with blame. It's not charged with stress or anxiety. So sometimes in our meditations, while breathing in and out, formations come, we experience it, we wish to bring some calmness to that, there, that calmness to it is what do I need to take out of it without denying the fact, without denying the event. And it's a great challenge, but it's a challenge that's pointing to a liberation. I'm cutting into your walking time here. Without apologies. And then it goes into the, it's a kind of flow on from that. In the third tetrad of mindfulness, breathing in and out. And sometimes just to experience the inner life. Not trying to do anything about it. Not trying to take the problem out of it, just to experience and be in touch and be quite clear and notice the changes and just be with the inner life. And a little bit of the benefit of all of that is as we get used to it, we will catch things earlier. A lot of difficulty and unhappiness in life is because we have neglected to look early. So things have been building up, we've ignored them, we've been too busy, we've been too preoccupied, they've been building up and building up, and then
after a time, something will happen. It could be an explosion. It could be a depression. It could be a burnout, a complete loss of energy, a feeling of despair. It doesn't arise from nothing. It arises because we as human beings have forgotten to be in touch with ourselves on the day-to-day basis, and then the outcome of that is a really heavy, difficult, problematic state of mind. So, while breathing in and out, one is experiencing the mind. While breathing in and out, one is knowing the condition of the mind. And all of that contributing to the concentration, to being steady, concentrating with the breath, with the body, with the mind, there. And then, another important concept is used for reflection. If you can, time to time during the day, to remember what you feel glad about. To remember, to reflect, what you feel glad about. What you feel you can rejoice with. What you appreciate. As we say sometimes in English, count your blessings. So there is a greater recognition there. So during the day, it may be in the meditations or in the informal period, turn the attention to some of the blessings of life, what you feel glad about, what you feel happy about, what you can appreciate, to let all of that. Small health warning here. In the willingness to allow one to have contact with that, sometimes it will expose very, very clearly what you are not glad about. That's the health warning. If you put the consciousness in one direction and say, okay, I'm going to make some time today to really start appreciating life more, what I'm happy about, what I'm glad about, and all inwardly and outwardly there, if you allow that reflection to take place, it may be that what stands out is what you are not glad about at all. And it's just an indication that the inner life has got enough space for something to move through, to work with, to look at. And then one is back to what are the causes and conditions, what needs to change, so I take the heat out of the situation. Not trying to get rid of the situation, but take the heat out of it. And all of this finally contributes to the freeing of the mind. So just quick recap here. Experiencing the breathing in and out is the flow which runs through. At times, the priority may be, just experiencing of the body and the relaxing of the whole body. And a person may say, I'm going to make that my practice when I'm sitting, walking, etc. And it's genuinely a great practice. Just seeing the body as organic life, elemental life. A person engaging in the mindfulness and breathing in and out says, I really need to give today more attention to this experience of happiness. What touches me? What brings up? What brings that happiness? When the happiness comes, then can I just be with this experience? As it goes more quiet, it transforms itself into a quiet joy. Let me just stay with that. When that fades away, I'm not going to cling to what it was about. I'll just go back to my practice, mindfulness of breathing in and out. Come to the time where I'm experiencing the mind. I may say to myself today, I'm going to make that my priority. I'm really going to do my practice, mindful, in and out, breathing, experience the mind there. And
if necessary, what would contribute to the calming of the mind? What would allow that? Is there any changes in attitude or intention? Is there anything I need to work with there? I may experience a mention of gladness, of blessings, of appreciation. It's not that I expect you to do all in one sitting or all in one period of time. Keep in touch with oneself. There may be a priority. It might be body and calming of the body. Precious. It may be mindfulness of breathing and real interest in happiness and joy. It may be experiencing the mind and calming the mind. It may be recognizing what you are glad about and appreciate and experience gratitude for. This is the thread of the day. So let's just have a couple of quiet minutes here.